Online verification of who's who, it's one of the major challenges facing industry and government. And how do you balance today's e-authentication technology with the possibilities of what might be coming down the pike in the future? Well, the National Institute of Standards and Technology is hoping its latest guidance will do just that. NIST unveiled its most significant changes to date for its digital authentication guidelines, and we get more now from Federal News Radio's Meredith Summers. Meredith, tell us about this new guidance, because this is really something everybody is always waiting for.
You're right. This guidance is about digital authentication in the federal government, and it used to be called e-authentication, but the NIST official I talked to said just this name change alone is an example of how this latest draft is different than its predecessors. Digital authentication is something we all use in some form, whether it's signing into an email or even when we get on our phones and we have to plug in whatever number combination. And the government has been working to modernize and streamline its digital authentication processes for a while. And what this guidance attempts to do is say, okay, this is what we have now. This is what could be coming down the road that we don't know about yet, but we need to be ready for, or at least have enough flexibility to be ready for. Here's Michael Garcia. He's the deputy director at NIST's National Strategy for Trusted Identities in cyberspace.
This is definitely the largest update that we've done to it in the 10 years since the first version was released. So we actually took what was one document, we split it now into four different documents, kind of the front matter, you know, talking about what the document exists, and then an A, B, and C volume, which is identity proofing, authentication, and federation. And so we've made massive changes. The Federation one is essentially all new. There was kind of a little bit of talking to it in the old version, but it's basically all new. The proofing is a complete rewrite.
That rewrite Garcia is talking about is based off good practices guidance, like the kind used in Canada and the UK, but he didn't really go into specifics of those practices. And what the identity proofing does is look at the outcomes of authentication. Here he is again explaining that.
We hope that that allows some additional future proofing. To say, okay, look, this is, if the document has the following characteristics, we're not going to specify a list of documents that do or do not meet them, but if you can demonstrate that that piece of evidence meets a certain criteria, then it is, then you can put it in a bucket, and the buckets being superior, adequate, unacceptable, weak, and then take that. Simply take that and move it over to the next step. Make a determination about what the if you should have already made a determination about your application and what kind of proofing you need for it, or if it's federated, what kind of proofing applications you want to serve with your proofing, and take and say, okay, well, for this identity assurance level 3, we need a strong and 2 superior documents. Something like that, right? You know, depending, we'll see where it ends up.
So the hope with this is that it gives agencies an option of a mix and match style of authentication. So if someone loses form, you know, identity X, it's not like they're up a creek. There should be a variety of ways to authenticate and also meet the security levels required.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Meredith Summers. And if someone familiar with this were to look at the new guidance, what else are they likely to see there?
Well, like Garcia said, this third version splits the original document into 4 documents. Digital authentication guidelines, which just kind of sets out what this guidance is going to do, enrollment and identity proofing, authentication and lifecycle management, and federation and assertions. And like Michael Garcia of NIST said, the federations and assertions document is practically all new. This is the way in which the results of an authentication process are sent to the relying party who needs to know this is the person who says they are who they say they are. The benefits of this federated identity architecture include enhanced privacy, data minimization, cost reduction, and enhance user experience.
Nirvana.
Yes. And I should know that there have already been 200 comments on this latest draft. And this guidance is just the latest in the government's ongoing efforts to modernize and streamline electronic credentialing. Earlier this year, Tony Scott, the federal CIO, sent a memo to agency CIOs about a new platform for logging in. And they said this was from 18F. And 18F says they plan to work with NIST, as well as OMB and GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. And then just a month later, a little bit earlier this summer, the Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson announced in June his plan to phase out the Common Access Card, CAC, over the next 2 years. Jason Martin, a services executive with the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA, he was at the same symposium in Washington that Michael Garcia was at, said his agency has started to also look at multi-factor and what it really means.
The card today, though it's not convenient for mobile devices, works incredibly well for application authentication, for workstation authentication, yep. a number of things. So the problem for us becomes, not the problem, but the challenge becomes, how is that going to exist in the future? If that all becomes virtual, how do we do it? So I think we're looking at a number of tools. Industry has worked on a number of tools. You know, we talk about it. I think you're going to talk about biometrics in a little bit. Those are some of the things we can look at. Are those reliable right now? I don't know. But they are certainly within the realm of possibility and what we need to look at.
Biometrics that Jason Martin mentioned is just one thing on the horizon, if not any closer, when it comes to multi-factor authentication in the government. And that's why NIST is working to get this document out so that it's able to address today's needs and tomorrow's technology.
You know, from the perspective of, it is about that outcome and performance sort of standards basis, right? So it is about getting to that next layer and saying, can we focus on making things work wherever the user comes from? You know, I always like to talk about things that are 60-40. And, you know, so, well, do you think it's going to be facial recognition or iris or fingerprint? I think that's a ridiculous question. I think that even if the two options were facial recognition and fingerprint, and 60% preferred fingerprint and 40% preferred facial recognition, I made those numbers up, then that's really close to 50-50. In fact, it's a lot closer to 50-50 than it is to 100-0, so let's not pretend that one of them is the right answer. And I don't see a scenario in the future where there is a single right answer, or you'll find yourself in the same kind of conversations we have with passwords and the same kind of conversations we have with PIV and CAC about whether this form factor is unusable. It's about making, it's about creating a basis for standards, and I don't just mean technical, but policy standards and business models in which you can have modularization and you can swap solutions in and out, and a relying party can make a decision as to whether they trust it because they know how it was issued, they know what's anchored, what it's anchored to, and they know it's essentially its level of performance.
Michael Garcia from NIST. And Meredith, is this new guidance final? You said there are 200 comments, or there's still another draft taking into account the comments?
There's still more to go.
Federal News Radio is Meredith Summers. Read her story and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.